It keeps us disconnected from each other and from ourselves. It keeps us from the things that we really love doing because we're worried someone's going to reject us or judge us. And so, yeah, as we've talked about, there's a lot of downside and energy that's spent in hiding. And to your point, there's some benefits too, right? Like I got certainty, like I knew how to control something. At one point I had a prosthesis when I was a teenager. I had a prosthesis twice in my life. One when I was a baby, that was a different story, and that was helping me crawl. This was as a teenager because my parents started to notice that I was hiding it. So they got me a cosmetic prosthesis, which looked just like my hand. And I remember going to high school with it and going to my first dance and so worried that this prosthetic was going to fall off. And that fear of I couldn't control it. If somebody went to reach for my hand, they might pull it off. It wasn't attached. Like it was, you know, it stuck on-ish. And so I got used to, you know what, I would so much rather be certain of what I'm hiding and know that I can control it. And to, like we talked about before, the other benefit that I absolutely see, and I'm so curious how you think about this, but it's that, again, that comfort that you allow for other people. They don't have to be uncomfortable.
Well, hey there, Driven Woman Entrepreneur. That brief clip from today's expert interview with Ruth Rathblatt on the topic of hiding and unhiding really got me thinking. According to Ruth, we're all hiding something. It may be big, it may be small. For her, it was a physical difference that she was very proud to be able to hide, even in her intimate encounters for over two decades, realizing much later just how much hiding really cost her. Are you hiding something? Is there something keeping you from being less than the full expression of yourself in your relationships, in your business, and other places in your life? I hope as you listen, you will use this interview, this conversation between Ruth and I, as an inspiration to consider what it would be like to begin the process of unhiding and what the benefits of that might be for you. Have a listen and reach out and let me know what you think. You can reach me in the DMs on LinkedIn and Instagram, or you can always contact me through my website. Let's get right to the interview. So Ruth, we are here today to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart and something that you are a keynote speaker about, have a book about, and a TED Talk about, and that is hiding, and more importantly, unhiding. So where shall we start with this really important topic?
I think we start at the beginning, Diane. Like, I think we start where it starts, which is, it's not birth, right? It's the first time you notice when you're different than someone, that something is different about you that you may be rejected about, you may find judgment about, and you just feel different. And so you recognize that part and you start to hide it. That's the place to start, I think.
And this starts pretty early on. It may be that you have a physical difference, and we'll talk about yours, or you might have a psychological difference, or I have a lot of redheads in my life, and they'll tell me as soon as they realize that being a ginger made them different, they started becoming self-conscious in many respects. So how early do you think it tends to happen for most people? Because I think most people think there's something different about them or wrong about them.
Yeah, I can speak for myself and I can speak to what people have shared with me. I think our teenage years and our adolescence are some of the toughest times, not just because of hormones and mood swings and things like that, but it's the time where fitting in is magnified. It's the idea that you want to connect with your peers, you want to be liked, you want to move away and individuate from your parents. So you find that space to want to be like your peers. And that's truly what happened for me. I left the safe confines of a middle school to go to a big high school. And, you know, we know that anytime you kind of change lanes or change into something new, that's also when difference shows up because you're now trying to fit in and you start to notice where you're different than others. For me, that was the first day of high school. And I remember waiting to get onto that yellow school bus and thinking about, oh, am I going to like the kids that I'm going to school with? Will I make friends? And when I sat down and other kids started getting on the bus at different stops, somebody stared just a little bit too long.
Hmm.
And they noticed my hand. They noticed my limb difference. And for the first time, I took my hand and I tucked it into my pocket. Diane, I had never done that before. I had never hidden it so that people wouldn't see it. And I remember thinking, it's weird that I'm getting self-conscious about this, but it was a natural impulse and reaction. And I hid it for the bus ride thinking, oh, I'll just get to school and everything will be okay. I just don't want anyone else on the bus to do that same thing. And I got to school and my hand stayed tucked in my pocket. It stayed there that first day, that first year, that second year, all 4 years. Even when I went off to college thinking, oh, this time I'm going to show that, you know, they're not going to know about my 4-year history of hiding my hand. I didn't know how to stop hiding it because I part of my narrative about myself.
There's so much that's fascinating to me about this, including the fact that you managed to get all the way through elementary school and middle school without feeling the need to hide. And I'm going to imagine that your parents must have done a really good job of normalizing your difference for you, because I would have expected your observing the difference and observing other people's reaction to it, I would have guessed it would have been in elementary school. So I'm sure there's some factors that sort of pushed that out till high school. Can you share those?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. My parents did an amazing job at encouraging me to try everything and do everything. And that was advice they had gotten from, I was born in the days before sonograms. So my difference was a surprise to my parents, to the doctors and nurses. This was before limb differences were really something that people knew a lot about, and they still are figuring things out. And the nurse came over because she saw that my parents were shocked and bewildered. And she said, she carried me over and she said, you're going to take this little girl home. You're going to love her and treat her like you would any other child. You're going to treat her as normal. And that's absolutely what they did. So I was encouraged to try everything and get into everything and learn how to ride a bike, learn how to tie my shoes, like do all of those things. There was an instance when I was writing the book that there was a memory I recalled with my father, which was in first grade, there was a bully who had said something apparently to me about my hand. And I went home and told my parents, and let's just say she was taken care of the next day. And so it didn't happen again. So I never, I didn't have the incessant bullying. I was lucky and definitely privileged in that sense of not having that. I ran for student government. I was always in theater. I was in sports. I did everything. And what was amazing is that when I got to high school, the hiding stopped me from doing those things because I was worried about people finding out and judging me.
And that's one of the things that parents really come to terms with at puberty, and the changes that are going on in the brain and with the hormones that literally shift our focus exclusively to fitting in with our peers. So
it's a healthy development, though. It's healthy development.
And necessary. But for you, it marked a distinct transition from self-acceptance to questioning.
To questioning and hiding.
And
I will say one of the things that I looked back at is, and I now advise parents about when I talk to parents about teenage years and difference, is creating space for those conversations, because all of us at some point will feel different. How do we start to have conversation, safe conversation with especially our immediate family if they feel safe around it, right? And that's where I think I've talked to my father about it. Unfortunately, my mom passed before my journey of unhiding really unfolded. And my father, though, I said the one piece that I feel like was missing while all of that encouragement and engagement of me in activities was the space to have conversation, because they noticed I was hiding. And how could we have talked about it differently? How could it have been a space to say, why are you hiding? Like, what's going on? Because that's not the Ruth we knew. So let's talk about it, creating that space. And I still might have given them the answer that everything was fine, like most teenagers do, right? Everything's good. Everything's fine. It's okay. Yet I would have known there was a space when things weren't fine to go back to. And so, yeah, hindsight is 20/20. I now share again with parents, create that space for communication. Even, and I say it to friends too, if you see something that's going on with someone you've known for a long time, create the space for the conversation because, yeah, I was hiding and it was really hard. And I was trying to figure things out, like how to get out of class early to go get my locker and books and not have to have anyone see my hand, how to get out of gym class, I would skip lunch sometimes during high school because I was so afraid of how to carry a tray with one hand, get the things I needed, and then not have it topple over like the worst high school nightmare in the cafeteria. So I just skip lunch because I didn't want to be found out. So it was exhausting and it was lonely. And that's what hiding is like.
And that is the first step of the process that you've developed to help other people understand that they are hiding and how to begin the process of unhiding. And I think something we had talked about previously is that you actually, because you are resilient, because you are resourceful, and because you had all those early childhood years to develop those traits and those skills, you actually got pretty masterful at hiding. Like, you were very clever, not just by avoiding being seen and avoiding having your difference observed, but you got some pretty crafty ways of hiding in plain sight. I'd love you to share those as well.
Yeah, no, people are always interested. They're like, how did you hide? I mean, I hid, Diane, for 25 years. I got really good at hiding. And so I hid what started out with that hand in the pocket. That was one technique. Mm-hmm. I also hid with longer sleeves. So winter was a great season because, and I think about it now as we start into the winter of life, it was colder, so I could wear longer sleeves and mm-hmm. people wouldn't know. But I also wore longer sleeves in the summer and suffered through some really hot summers with longer sleeves and turtlenecks. That was a second technique. And then the third is even behind bags. I would carry book bags or bags and hide it behind that, like in the fold between myself and the bag, thinking no one would see it. And they didn't. I will say it got so intense that even during, and I imagine your listeners might have their jaws open at this one, even during intimate encounters, I hid.
So oh, wow. Mm-hmm. You know what? That makes sense because during intimate encounters is when we are at our most exposed and vulnerable.
Yes. And it lacked definitely the pockets and the and the longer sleeves. And so, yeah, I would find ways to hide that way too. And when you think about it, when you're hiding, even in any circumstance, including those encounters, you're not really present then. You're not really enjoying it. You're thinking about being found out. So your world becomes that obsession with that.
Your focus is not on the engagement and the experience. The focus is on the camouflage and the distraction, and being found out. And do you think, because we're not just talking high school, we're talking, you had a long track record of hiding that followed you into your career, into your relationships, into every corner of your life. Was there a place during the hiding years where you could just drop the mask and unhide when you were alone, or did you have those moments too?
Absolutely. And I think most of us do. And for me, it was college, where I advocated outside of my dorm room, the dorm RA's office, to say, I need a single. I need to have a space where I can just be alone so that because having a roommate, and I'd gone to boarding school, so I had roommates and it was intense. It's 24/7 thinking about the hiding. And so in college, I got smart for myself and I said, I need a place to just be by myself. And that became my dorm room so that I could, in that space, not worry, you know, lock my door, know that I was in this safe place, and then let people in that needed to know about my hand.
One of the things that we talked about in a previous conversation was this, it's almost perverse in a way, but when we believe there's something wrong with us and that the difference that is ours makes us in some way less than other people, obviously we have to cover it up. We have to hide it. And our personality and our identity develops around that hiding, and it develops around that inauthenticity in a way. And we even become proud about how well we're able to hide. I happen to have a difference that's a neurodiversity, and I remember being very proud of what I called passing for normal. It was really important to me that people didn't know about my difference, so I behaved as though it were not there, and I tried to cover up the evidence. I had a lot of anxiety about being found out, but I was pretty successful at it, and that became a big part of my identity, is sort of like pulling one over on people, which as I look back now, I don't really think I fully appreciated at the time the cost and the consequence of that to me. Do you think you were aware of what it was costing you to hide during the years that you were very successfully hiding?
That's a really good question. I don't think I was aware of the toll it was taking on my mental health, on my physical health. No, I don't think I knew how exhausting and lonely it was. I think part of what I also hear you saying, Diane, is the stories that we tell ourselves about our difference are so much worse than the actual thing itself. Mm. And so that magician part of our lives, or the con of our lives, right? Like, we think we're actually doing other people a favor by not sharing this out, that's the sense of pride of like, okay, people will like me because I'm giving them what they want to see.
Yes.
Rather than what I believe about myself. Like, I made people believe that I had two hands. That was the image. I never disrupted that image. I mean, I had many people ask at different points, like, oh, how come your hand is always in your pocket? Or, oh, that's strange. But it becomes that masterful piece of, I'm going to let you believe what you need to believe, that I have two hands. Like, I'm not, because the other to me was so, the idea of having people see my one hand was so monstrous and awful for me that I wouldn't let it be seen. Even I remember going to a therapist and wanting to talk about it. And he said, well, can I see it? And it took me weeks for him to be able to see it. And at one point, I mean, because I really believed he would think it was so awful and monstrous that he wouldn't want to see me in therapy anymore. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
That's not the reality. Like, and even though, I guess the other part of hiding, and maybe you've experienced this too, Diane, and your listeners have, is even people can tell you, oh, it's not that bad. It's, oh, you're fine. Like, oh, don't hide your hand. Don't hide your personality. Don't hide your family background. You're fine. Like, don't hide. And yet we've created sometimes those stories in our head that are so much worse than the thing itself that we don't believe when people tell us, oh, you don't have to hide. We have to get there ourselves. And that's why that first step that you mentioned is about acknowledging it. It's about to yourself doing the, and I call it self-centered work, not in a negative self-centered way of really going in and saying, what is it that's holding me back from having those beautiful, authentic relationships with people, having that relationship with myself? What's keeping me from thriving and just feeling connected? And that's the work of the first step. And it's not an overnight process. It doesn't show up and all of a sudden you say, I think I'm going to unhide tomorrow. Because I tried that many times. I mean, every time I would start something new, I'd say, all right, this time you're going to show up as your two-handed self. Well, no, I showed up as hiding because that was my go-to. That became comfortable.
It was your default.
My default.
And it fit well with your belief system at that time. Something you said a few minutes ago that was so fascinating to me, and I hadn't honestly considered until I heard you say it. I completely understand and resonate with needing to hide because we don't think that other people will accept us as we truly are. Mm-hmm. But you believed that your difference was so unacceptable that you needed to protect people.
Yes. There's definitely an element of that.
Which it's interesting because it's now that we've done this work, we understand that sort of deciding what other people can handle, deciding for them what right. they can tolerate, what they are willing to accept, what their reactions will be. That's not kind. That's not generous. It's actually arrogant. That's
also not realistic.
No. In reality, I mean, we're saying, hey, it's better to unhide, and we're going to go into that a lot more and go through the steps that you've uncovered on how to unhide. But the reality is that some people won't be able to handle it. Some people, whatever the difference is, yes. some people, you will get the negative reaction. It won't be as bad as what you've always told yourself it would be, but there will be people who won't be able to handle the truth, the yes. whole truth and nothing but the truth. And we also have to be prepared for that.
Yes. No. Yes. And I will say that the hiding makes other people sometimes comfortable because yes. they don't have to then deal with it. Right. So they don't have to deal, for me, they don't have to deal with disability and asking a question or staring too long or being uncomfortable and thinking, oh, well, wait, how did that happen? Like all the questions and all the thoughts about disability, they don't have to deal with if I hide. And so that is a space that I absolutely believe that's one of the benefits. And I don't see it as an arrogance thing in that sense of like, you know what, there are people, to your point, that are going to say some things that are not okay. And so being prepared for that, yes. And it just plays sometimes, it's like when we look at, have you ever written a paper for a teacher and then you get it back and all you look for are the red marks, right? The things that they're saying that are negative. That's what sometimes with all the positive that I've heard about my hand, like, oh, it's cute. Oh, you shouldn't hide it. All those things. I always wait for the other shoe, right? Which is the, oh, somebody's going to say something. Even in dating relationships, guys would be like, it's fine. Like when I would finally tell them but I'd wait for the, okay. And it didn't come, but still I had such a strong belief system that this was negative, that I was going to prove them wrong. I was going to put up those walls even higher because it was a wall. They were all walls.
How did you look at your, and I definitely want to ask you next about the benefits of hiding. Because I think that, I mean, we are kind of dipping our toes into that, but I think that's really interesting because there are some benefits. But during the hiding years, did you ever look back to yourself as a young girl and think, I didn't think this was a big deal then? And what did you think of that? Did you think you were just ignorant? Did you think that you were naive? Did you think that your more mature self realized it actually was a problem all along? Like, I'm wondering what the hiding adult thought about the unhidden girl.
Yeah, I don't think she gave, I mean, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I don't think she gave her a lot of credence or a lot of time. I think was very spent. I spent a lot of time in the hiding conversation and not so much in how come this was so bad. This wasn't like this before. In writing the book single-handedly, I absolutely went there and thought about like, hey, here was this kid. She did everything. I just believed a different narrative in high school that, yeah, I didn't look back at her as a teenager. I thought about her then and present. And even in the 25 years that followed that, I may have glimpsed at her and said, oh, how come? But yeah, I didn't do a lot of work on her and thinking about her.
Well, you did say that hiding, like, and the first step of hiding is understanding that it's exhausting and lonely. Yeah. And so with that much energy going into hiding and maintaining the hiding, it's all encompassing.
It's all encompassing. You know, it's when I was writing the book, it's funny. I had a friend and I was interviewing different people. I think this was even when I did the TEDx, is I asked some of my girlfriends from college, like, how did you guys talk about it? Like, did you have conversations about this without me there? Like, how were you managing through this? And one of them shared a story of how we were on coming back from a road trip and we were heading to a friend's house to have dinner. And I got, I guess, nervous. And I said, will you sit next to me at dinner? And she said, yeah, I don't know why you're thinking about dinner already. Like, we still have hours to go on this road trip. And I said, because this seems like a family that's going to want to sit down and say grace. And then we're going to have to. And I don't want anyone to be surprised or grossed out or shocked by having to hold my hand. Will you sit next to me? You don't even have to really hold it. You could just kind of hold my arm. And she said, Ruth, I had no idea how much foresight and forethinking you had to do all the time. Like, you were constantly thinking about situations. You were two or three steps always thinking about how is this going to show up. You were constantly worried about it. So that's the exhaustion part, is it's not just what you think about it, but it's how you're going to handle if someone finds out, or how you're going to handle to maneuver around it so that nobody finds out.
And that adds to whatever amount of discomfort and planning that goes into just having a disability, period.
Right. On top of it, right. You don't actually, and I think in some ways you don't actually get to know your disability because you're always worried about hiding it. You're always worried about, you don't actually get to accept it because you've spent so much time worried about it and forecasting those next steps so as not to get discovered. And that's the beauty, Diane, of the work that I do, which is I use my hand as a tool to talk about this idea of hiding, because most of us are hiding something and it keeps us disconnected from each other and from ourselves. It keeps us from the things that we really love doing because we're worried someone's going to reject us or judge us. And so, yeah, as we've talked about, there's a lot of downside and energy that's spent in hiding. And to your point, there's some benefits too, right? Like, I got certainty. Like, I knew how to control something. At one point, I had a prosthesis when I was a teenager. I had a prosthesis twice in my life. One when I was a baby. That was a different story, and that was helping me crawl. This was as a teenager because my parents started to notice that I was hiding it. So they got me a cosmetic prosthesis, which looked just like my hand. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to high school with it and going to my first dance and so worried that this prosthetic was going to fall off. And that fear of, I couldn't control it. If somebody went to reach for my hand, they might pull it off. It wasn't attached. Like, it was, you know, it stuck on ish. And so I got used to, you know what, I would so much rather be certain of what I'm hiding and know that I can control it. And to, like we talked about before, the other benefit that I absolutely see, and I'm so curious how you think about this, but it's that, again, that comfort that you allow for other people. They don't have to be uncomfortable. So that's another benefit. The challenge with it, with both of those, is that they are exhausting and they are lonely and they take a toll. And the more you hide, the harder it is to stop hiding. And so, like lying, I say, like when we tell that little white lie and then it gets harder to get out of it, that's what lying is like. That's what hiding is like.
I can't speak to having a physical disability, but I will tell you that I and many of the people that I know and people that I work with have what we might call invisible disabilities. And I think everything that you're saying is 100% relevant and resonates, because it gets built into both your worldview and your self-concept. I was astonished to read in the book, The Big Leap, which is now 20 years old, and I still love and recommend this book, that there's something about upper limit issues, the number one upper limit issue that, according to the author, every person has, is called the fundamental flaw. And that is the belief that there's something wrong with them. Like, and I don't know if it's universal. I'm going to guess, with this many people on the planet, there's got to be somebody out there that doesn't believe there's something wrong with them. But if the majority do, and that gets woven into their self-concept and their worldview, then possibly everyone's hiding. Like, everyone, for one reason or another. That's kind of scary to contemplate.
or it's kind of beautiful to contemplate because then we can do something with it. Do you know what I mean? Like if we know that we're all hiding something, then we can take, we're not alone in this. So we can say, okay, I felt like that. You felt like that. We can actually lower our shoulders, right? Because and we can exhale to be like, oh, wait, I'm not alone in this. Other people are hiding too. There's comfort in the numbers. So what do we do with it, right? How do we create those safe places so that we can acknowledge it? We can move it forward and create that place that people feel like they can bring their best self forward or their full self. I caution on authentic self often yes. because I'm sure that we're set up for that. In workplaces or communities, we don't have the skilled therapists like you, Diane, or the coaches, right? We don't have that in workplaces and communities often that is accessible to everyone. So how do we offer support around it? Because if we know that most of us slash all of us are hiding, how do we start to have that conversation? So it opens, that's what it does for me is it says, all right, there's some legitimacy. That's what's happening. I can tell you in all of the few years that I've been speaking now, and I speak globally about this idea of unhiding and hiding, I've only had two people tell me that they are not hiding anything. And the first time it came up, I said to the person, that is great. Now you can be an ally to all of us who are hiding. Like you can, because if you're not hiding, lucky you, because most of us are. And how do we create that space? And that was, I think people really appreciated that answer because the other piece is, are you willing to be introspective enough? Are you willing to be self-centered enough to go there and think about yourself? And maybe it's too scary because, as I said, unhiding is a journey. It is not an overnight process. We do not wake up and say, I'm hiding this and tomorrow I'm going to stop, because we beat ourselves up more when we try to do that.
Well, you have four steps that you guide people through. And the first one is that you actually acknowledge that you are hiding. And that requires the willingness to be vulnerable and the willingness to be introspective. And that might be a really big ask for a lot of people because yes. just the vulnerability and the introspection alone will stop people. But if they are willing to do that and they can ease into it, they can go in the shallow end and sit on the stairs as long as they want. They don't have to jump off the diving board into the deep end right away. They can ease into that acknowledgement and acceptance. How do they start with that? How do they even recognize that, oh, I'm actually hiding?
Yeah. And I don't want to promote my book, but I do will say in my book, Diane, it's a series of questions, right? It's reflection questions on the idea of when have you felt different in your life? How do you understand difference? Where are you hiding? Because I take people through my journey of hiding with reflection questions. And then I offer also for people to journal and to go to therapy and to think about those spaces in their life of, are they at the place in their life where they are totally satisfied with how it's going in terms of their four pillars? Are they satisfied with their work situation? Are they satisfied with their relationships? Are they satisfied with their recreational activities? And are they satisfied with their health? Mm-hmm. And if you can answer yes to all of them, great. But if there's something that's nudging at you or bothering you a little bit, then spend some time in the introspection. And one of the tools I have on my website is a place to share your story. Because the beauty of acknowledging it, even to yourself and writing it down, is that you can't unsee it then. Mm. Then you it's about saying, okay, this is something that's coming up for me. Now, what do I do with it? Right? Like now what happens? And that's the gift that we can give ourselves is start to acknowledge it so that you can move it forward in your life.
So the first step is the acknowledgement. And once we've identified, okay, this is an issue for me, I'm accepting that. I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to resist it. I'm just going to be with that. But that's not enough to really start the process of unhiding because then you'd be the only one that knows.
Right. No. And so the second step becomes identify and invite one person in to tell. And I imagine for some of your listeners, and Diane, you too, when I say that step of invite someone in, someone who you trust, someone pops to mind. There's somebody that you go to who you say, yeah, I could tell them about this, or I could tell them about this podcast I just heard and say, oh, on the Driven Women Entrepreneur podcast, I heard this woman talking with Diane about that she hid for 25 years. Many of us are hiding, if not all of us. I wanted to tell you about something I'm hiding, right? Like we're here talking about. And that allows for you to say it out loud to one person. It just takes one person to be able to say it out loud. Because now you've said it to yourself, you say it out loud to that one trusting person. And then you start to, the third step is you start to build community around it. You find the shared experiences of those who have either been in a similar situation of what you're challenged with or challenging yourself with. And you start, I mean, that's what happened to me. I invited somebody in. He taught me how to learn to love my hand, how to hold it, how to look at it. And then I started to find as that changed how I started to see myself. Because then what happened is I was able to start to see disability with a different vantage point and viewpoint. Mm. I started to actually seek out people with disabilities and limb differences like mine. And I went and I Googled limb differences. And Diane, a whole frame of people with my hand showed up. And I mean, that was super powerful to realize, again, I wasn't alone in this. I had thought for so many years I was the only one that had this hand or that had ever hidden it. I thought I invented hiding. Like that's where the arrogance shows up, is I thought I invented hiding. And what I realized by meeting others with limb differences, many had done the same things, whether in the sleeves or the pocket or behind the book bag. And we had all felt like we were on in an island by ourselves. And so that's the power of community. It's building that community of people with shared experiences and realizing you're not alone. And then the fourth step is after you've gotten through acknowledging and inviting someone in and building your community is sharing out your story. And it doesn't have to be going on a podcast like we were talking about with you, right? Or going on to Oprah or Dr. Phil or even a town hall. It can be with just a few close friends and share your story, because what happens when we start to share our story is others see themselves in our story. And then think about their own path of what they need to acknowledge, invite, and build, and then share their story. It becomes this really beautiful loop and powerful loop, almost like a flywheel. And so that's the power of unhiding. That's the community that I'm building out, is the space that people can feel safe to acknowledge their differences, and that we actually start to value different experiences and differences overall, and disability.
We say we do. I mean, so many companies, and I'd like to take it to like the responsibility of companies, the educational system, you know, the larger culture. We have disability mandates, we have laws, we have protections, but what we don't have is a culture that teaches people how to do this. We legislate these things. We say, oh, if your child has a disability, they have certain rights in the education system. You can ask for certain accommodations. That's not really the kind of help that's going to make it possible to unhide. In fact, that's emphasizing the disability. And I'm not saying these things are bad. These things are good. These things are necessary. But in many respects, there's a lot deeper work that we need to do culturally and individually, right?
Absolutely. And I have a few thoughts on that as tangentials, which is, one is I recognize first and foremost the privilege of being able to unhide. Like that is, it is a privilege to be able to unhide, because there are certain segments in our country and around our world that it is unsafe to unhide right now. And
absolutely,
recognizing that is really important, because how do we create a safe, the North Star is how do we create that safe place for everyone to feel safe to unhide? And that's the goal here. And so as I build out what I'm calling the Institute for Unhiding, it's thinking about it from an education standpoint, right? In terms of young people. It's thinking about it from the corporate level. And so wouldn't it be wonderful if in schools and in corporations and in community events and charities and nonprofits that we had a manifesto, an unhiding manifesto, that at this workplace or at this school or at this nonprofit, we actually value difference. We value different experiences, and it is a safe place, psychologically safe place, to be yourself. And what does that look like? And so it's funny, Diane, because I think if we break down, there's education and let's say workplace as two separate pieces. Education, it's interesting. We give children a message about difference very young.
Yes, we do.
And there's a beautiful thing about kids, and I've had it many times. You may have too, and your listeners may have too, which is kids are naturally curious. It often comes from a beautiful place and a good place. Sometimes it's abrupt. Sometimes it feels unfiltered. And so kids will come up and they'll say, oh, what happened to your hand? And I will say, oh, this is the way I was born. You know, every one of us has something different. What's different about you? Before I can sometimes even get that what's different about you statement out, a parent or a guardian or someone watching that child will immediately come over and say, I'm so sorry. We don't ask about things like that. Stop that. That was not nice. So we've messaged two things to kids. We've messaged, don't be curious, which is a beautiful childhood thing, and not, and we can use it as a teaching moment to talk about difference. And the second thing, Diane, that we've signaled is we don't talk about disability. Disability is a bad thing. So we are now those adults that were given that message as kids. And so we've raised it. So how do we break that barrier around disability? Being able to talk about disability, being able to say the word disability is such a big thing for some people. And so how do we create conversation so that disability becomes a proud word, a strong word, something that is a community? It's part of an identity. It's not all of an identity. It's a piece of it. How do we start to, in the education system, own that space? And similarly, in the corporate space, how do we start to value difference? And how do we have leaders go first in this unhiding? Because that's where culture starts. And I wasn't always a great leader in terms of, I delegated culture a lot. And so recognizing that leaders need to go first and talk about what it is in their lives they're unhiding. Let's break that old school mentality of leadership to be one of, wow, I can be vulnerable. People don't have to be at arm's length to be connected to me. I actually don't have all the answers. That's really good leadership. And so that's actually what my second book is about, and that I'm working on right now, is this idea of global leaders and unhiding and why it's important to culture. That's the part I want to see in companies.
Because you're absolutely right. In order for us to all be able to thrive in an unhidden way, we have to get to the educational system and corporations. And you're absolutely right. It has to start with leaders. And they are probably not going to be happy about that initially, because they are probably hiding things themselves and have been trained to do so for many, many years. And parents are going to need to raise their kids differently.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Have education around that too, right? Because that's a space. You know, it's funny. And I just wrote about this on LinkedIn 2 days ago, which is timely in the sense of, I had a leader come to me and say, Ruth, I love what you're doing and you're unhiding talk, and I get it. She's like, and I will never unhide to my staff. And I said, why? And she said, because I don't trust them to not use it against me. And I said, wow. So they either have, you have the wrong team, or they have the wrong leader, because that is a really toxic work environment to not trust your team. And I understand it all too well. And I also understand the responsibility I had as a leader to build culture and to trust my team and for them to trust me. And sometimes that had to start, well, not even sometimes, that had to start with me. And I didn't always understand that. I often, as I said, delegated it out. And leaders sometimes do that.
We have huge problems in the workplace culture at this moment. A lot of smart people are talking about this. We have people talking about, you know, the great resignation, quiet quitting, toxic workplaces. And it really does come down to the fact that people don't feel a sense of safety and they don't trust that they can be unhidden in the workplace. So we're talking, you've got a big mission field ahead of you, my friend.
I know. And that's the exciting part too, right? That's what wakes me up every day is, wow, there are spaces that there is work to be done on how do we get, because nobody, to your point, there's a lot of quiet quitting, there's retention issues, there's bottom line. And we know it's better to have staff on board than have to constantly rehire and look for new talent. Like, that's a big challenge. There's also some leadership challenges of thinking about, you know, this again, we've adopted many of us old school leadership principles that need to be broken, especially in a workforce of today who past COVID have some ideas about how it needs to be. So how do we modify how we're leading? And it starts with leaders. So there is a lot of work to be done, but I have some really great allies and ambassadors with me. And Diane, I think you're one of them with me. Like, you're in this. It's the idea of how do we feel seen and heard and that we belong. That's the idea so that we can thrive.
Especially in this time where so much commerce and education is being conducted virtually.
Yeah.
We started before we even hit record on this conversation talking about the challenges of a global workplace and virtual communication across teams. Like, when people don't have the need or the reason, or it's not even possible for them to be in physical proximity to each other, we're starting to have a lot of issues around what we used to be able to count on in terms of our social awareness and social skills. And I think this is such a timely conversation and such a timely initiative, because I think it's easier than ever to hide, even including behind your Zoom screen. People don't even turn their cameras on.
They don't turn their cameras on. They mute their microphones. And sometimes, Diane, they change their background so that we don't see their dirty laundry or their dirty dishes or the people who are walking by, right, that we don't want them to see. Like, we hide parts of our life this way. And there's a certain, right, there's the payoff. There's a certainty to it. Then nobody has to get to know kind of what a mess my life is behind me. I can present like this, right, together, et cetera. And at the same time, it's exhausting because I had a leader who I was coaching say to me, when I work from home, I turn my camera off and mute my microphone. And I said, why? He said, I have a daughter with mental health challenges and sometimes there are outbursts and I don't want anyone to see that for her, right, about her. So don't want to be seen as a bad leader or a bad father. That's the hiding too. It's like, then people don't really get to know you. They think like they're seeing a facade of something. That's the danger we've talked about too, about social media sometimes, right? Because we see only one side of somebody, not their full self. And so this allows for us to think about, what do we want to share with the world that would help us feel supported, that would help us feel seen and help us feel like we belong?
And given that we are in an epidemic of loneliness,
yes,
which has been well documented, I think this is one of the initiatives that more and more people need to talk about. And I will continue talking about, and I know you certainly will, because we all need each other. I mean, we can get by in our isolated little silos, but we will never thrive if we can't help to create a culture that allows us to be all of who we really are and feel safe doing so, and can trust that others are doing that as well. So
100%. I mean, it's funny. The book's title is Single-Handedly, right?
And I love that so much.
It was tongue in cheek in some ways, because what I've realized in writing the book and now speaking is you can't do it alone. You can't do it single-handedly. That's the goal here, is to have those connections, to build that community and to embrace it. But when you're hiding, it really becomes hard to build community because you're not showing up as your full self and people are making assumptions about what you're presenting and not your full self. They don't really get to know you.
I love that you've said what you gained most of all from hiding was certainty, which I think is another way of saying control.
Totally.
But it's an illusion of control. And what you have gained in exchange is access to your curiosity, to community, and to genuine connection. And I would have to say that's a much better trade-off.
100%, because that certainty, just like you're saying, can be gone in a minute when someone finds out. Like, it can take down the whole castle of cards. Like, it's it can be gone. Whereas the unhiding aspects of curiosity and community and connection and realness to yourself are so much stronger and stable.
And they pay dividends over time.
100%. And they're just, it's a beautiful life. I mean, it's also interesting. I mean, I named my TEDx, "When I Stopped Hiding, I Found Freedom," because I did. I found freedom to be doing back to the things I like. I got my life back when I stopped hiding. I got back to the things I loved doing and enjoyed doing. And that's what unhiding does. It allows us to have freedom.
I created a private podcast. It's absolutely free of charge, and you can listen to it in the very same place that you're listening to me now, but it's private. So the way you get access to it is you're going to click on the link in the show notes, you'll enter your email address in the form, and it will be sent to you. There are 10 minisodes. Each of them is a backstage pass into an actual coaching conversation that I have with one of my one-on-one coaching clients. Now, you're only going to hear my voice because privacy and confidentiality are important to me, but you're going to hear what the specific challenge or problem my client was facing and the feedback, advice, or mindset shift that I offered them. In the show notes, you're also going to get key points and takeaways because, as you know, if you're simply listening, nothing changes. It's when you apply what you learn that things begin to pop. So I hope you'll sign up for it. I hope you'll binge right through it. And I especially hope you'll let me know what you think. The link is in the show notes. Go grab it.